Welcome to Biohackers Lab, a place where we talk to smart people who are figuring out how to improve health in interesting ways. Join us to discover how you can biohack your life, your body, starting today.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Biohackers Lab. I'm your host, Gary Kerwin, and on today's show, we're speaking with EMF warrior, Scott Compton, otherwise known as Mr. Spock. And Scott's been on the show before in episode 2. So if you don't know about EMFs or EMF awareness, what it is, I'd recommend going back and listening to that episode there, because that was very useful just to help understand why we need to be worried about EMFs. But I'm so glad that I managed to get Scott back on, because a big issue that I see in the EMF community is how to use devices and EMF testing devices. And particularly if you're new to the EMF world, how to go from being, all right, I know there's a problem with EMFs, should I or shouldn't I buy a device, and which device should it be? And then potentially getting into the more advanced field. And someone like Scott, he has technical experience with most of the devices, and there's a large range of them. So I'm so glad I managed to get him back on. But another point that I'd like to just get across before I get Scott to take us through the EMF devices is that the devices that we're going to go through today aren't endorsed by the EMF Warrior organization itself. It's not saying that you have to buy these particular devices. It's allowing people just to be aware about the different types that are available, but there's lots of types available. And I would suggest that if you want to know more about any other EMF testing devices, to go to the EMF Warriors Facebook group page and ask your questions in there, or go to the library on EMF Warriors and look at all the device options also in there. But I'm so glad I managed to get you back onto the show, Scott. Thanks for coming on.
Yeah, thanks, Gary, for having me back.
Yeah, fantastic.
So yeah, that's true. We're kind of caught between a rock and a hard place when it comes to devices, because you don't want to, there's so many available things out there. It's like saying, well, what set of eyes or set of ears do I want to actually have that I don't actually physically have on my body? Now, if you have ES like I do, like electrosensitivity, I have meters kind of built into me, and I know when things go bad with certain environments. But that's a long, 20 years in the making of knowing, correlating being in a field and then getting tinnitus coming on or getting eye issues, what's really going on in your environment. So I think a good takeaway is that there's just a ton of devices out there that help with our ability to sense the EMFs or the voltage, right? Or to know what's going on for dirty electricity. So I'm of the impression that I just like to buy everything myself, because I like to see how the compare and contrast things. What's kind of funny, I'll just talk about this little tidbit here. Yesterday in my car, I used my entire vehicle as an EMF device. And how I did it was, is I turned my radio station to 560 on the AM dial and then turned it up so it was loud. And then if you go through fields, when you're driving on the street, if you're under a power line, you can actually hear the static change and the different frequencies change to your ear. So I had it up and I was around a place, actually I was passing a cell phone tower, and I could hear the change and the oscillation through the AM just hearing that. If you turn on your turn signal, or if you have a stick shift car like I do in my truck, you can actually hear as you're almost through the alternator, I think, because it's converting from DC to AC from your battery, you can actually hear the shift of the sound of the EMFs coming through your radio, picking up what your engine's doing, picking up what your turn signal's doing. So I was under a power line, and as I approached the power line, I purposely turned on my turn signal, and I could hear the click, click, click. But then as I got under the power line, the click, click, click just went click, 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 really loud in the clicking, because you can hear that extra energy coming through the speaker just from the power line being under it.
Wow. Okay, so that's quite a useful little tip for anyone who wants to just play around
as you're driving and see what's out there.
And so you're saying specifically the 560 AM Is that the one?
Yeah, you want to go either really high or really low on your on the AM dial. It's interesting. Like, there's certain radio stations on the AM dial you might get to, and you just lose all connection to that radio station. And then you might drive 2-3 miles in another location, and the whole radio station comes back. Well, there's, you know, it depends on the geometry of the Earth and how it's picking up where the frequency from the emitter from the radio station is coming to your car. Like, there's a lot of angles why you're losing the radio station, why it's coming back again. But if you generally have static really low, the lower you can get on the AM dial, the better, because then you can start picking up the other frequencies that are coming through kind of those bands, right? And
you have to use the indicator on the car to be able to hear that.
I like doing it because with the click-click, it's a constant oscillation. So you can kind of, you know, get that time frame and understand, like, okay, from click to click, if you hear any difference from click to click, almost like a metronome. Okay. So you get the click, 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 click. And then suddenly if the click gets more, you know, louder, and you can just hear it distort more through your ears, then you know that there's other fields around, and you can verify it, you know, getting out some of these meters I have behind me in the nutcase. I call it the nutcase.
Yeah, we're going to get into the nutcase. Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. Wow. Well, that's already a super useful tip for someone who just wants to play around and they want to check their local environment. Yeah.
They just got a radio in their car and it's free, and there you go. Right. Yeah. Well, it's free, really paid for, hopefully, if it's not on lease.
Okay. Well, I love that tip already. And, so now we're going through this scenario of someone who is a brand new beginner to the EMF awareness, and they understand, right, okay, EMF, all these non-native EMFs are maybe not so good. I'm worried about different frequencies because there are different types of EMFs out there, and they might think, should I start testing? Because you need to as you taught me last time in the last episode, even when we were talking about dirty electricity, I just thought, oh no, you just use a grounding device and you just use a dirty electricity meter, like a green wave, and that's just what you should do. And it was always that maybe you shouldn't. Mm-hmm. And unless you test, will you truly know if you should use those devices or if they're going to be good for you? So someone who's brand new, do you think they should be buying devices and trying to test?
It's a catch-22 because for a new person, I'd rather, like, if I was coming into this and had known nothing about this, I'd be pretty overwhelmed with just understanding what the numbers even mean when you get them. So if you get a meter and then use it and the numbers are coming up, or like along the side, it goes from green to yellow to red, you're only trusting what the company put into it. And then at that point, you're only trusting like what you know about what the numbers might even mean. So if you don't have any understanding of what the numbers are, you don't have background in what might be a biological problem if you're continuously in those fields, then I would say get a building biologist. Like if you're concerned about it, let them do the work. They are the experts. They have, you know, the certifications that you get in this stuff. So there's even I know a guy who is part of our group. Even he is a traveling building biologist, which is completely awesome. He's got, I think, a little like tiny home on a trailer, and he goes around the country and he'll let people know, hey, I'm going to be in your neck of the woods, you know, next week. If you want me to check out anything for you, I'm available for you. So like, that way it's like all the pressure is on the other guy and not on the onus isn't on the person to understand what all the numbers mean. Mm-hmm. And then you put a trust in somebody that's certified in it, just like you would with anything. Like if you get an electrician into your house.
Yeah.
If you get any specialist into your house.
Yeah, I would fully agree. Cause even myself, I would be overwhelmed. I just wouldn't know. And then I wouldn't want to be trying to do mitigation strategies and actually potentially causing myself issues, and because I didn't understand all of the different sources or how, when you move things around and what it does. So a building biologist, a professional who has access to all the equipment, plus they understand what all the data means and how to actually use that in a useful way, I think is a fantastic idea, and especially for a newbie or even advanced people. And as you said, on the EMF Warriors Facebook group, I've seen also people in other countries, not only in the US, but I believe one of the, I don't know if he's a founder or a supporter, David, because
he's related to our group. He's just like crazy expert. Like, we have crazy experts that have come out on the EMF Warriors page that know this stuff inside and out, that we're happy to see that in just like 7 weeks of after launch to have a ton of people.
Yeah, you've got over 1,000 people. I see you've just crossed that mark too in the Facebook group. So you're only going up. But it just shows, again, if you are looking for a building biologist in your country or your region, join the group, put your name, just ask out there, and you'll be surprised. There'll be people who can guide you.
Like I offer my, I'm not certified. I probably should be at some point, because I've been doing this for a long, long time and know how they all work. And I understand the biology aspect even more so to know, okay, I really want to minimize impacts. But what I do with everyone I know that ask me about it and come to me, I say, hey, I'll just come measure your place. I don't care about the money. Mm-hmm. I want them to be healthy. So yeah. I just go over and say, here's what I'm seeing. I think that's a hot spot. This is a problem. This is a problem. Leave it at that. It's up to them if they want to do anything about it. But I give them an extra set of eyes, just by bringing over my nutcase, and there you go.
Yeah. So can we get into your nutcase now?
Yeah, we'll get into my, get into my nutcase here. I can just tip it up. See if everybody can see it here.
Yeah. So unfortunately, just to let everyone know, if you're listening to this on the podcast, this is going to be very visual. So I'd recommend coming to the episode page and watching the YouTube video so you can actually see a lot of this equipment, but we'll try to walk you through it.
This is going to be actually a really fun video, because I'm going to be moving around and showing you kind of what these things are. Okay. So you can see up here in the corner right here, I've just got a standard AM/FM battery powered radio.
So you like listening to music when you work?
Yeah, no, I just basically pull this guy out. I'll just pull it out real quick and show you what's going on.
Yeah, so, that's an old school AM/FM.
This is like what I was saying, like with the car radio in my truck and detecting EMFs that way just by hearing them. This gives you a ballpark, right? Just a ballpark idea what might be happening here and there. Turn it on. One of these glasses are... Okay, it's on AM. Turn up the volume. So,
Can hear that.
So yeah, it's all the way down at 530, 530 kilohertz, I believe. So, as I move it around the room, of course you're going to hear different things. So what I've got going on is behind this wall is my office. And there are two computers that are on at the moment, and it's drawing a lot of power, like through my home. Just I know the layouts of my wiring, that there's a lot of power surge in the entire home being pulled from this space behind this wall, behind the nutcase. So I would expect, like, if I put the antenna and touch the antenna more to the wall, you'll hear frequency changes. What's interesting is, you can actually pick up some form of radio even coming through it way down there on the band. But as you move it around, if you hear spots change,
so hopefully people can hear it through your headsets too correctly.
Yeah, you kind of do a sweep with the radio, and that's why you buy a battery powered radio, because you can just take it everywhere and kind of sweep through. And then if you hear real strange sound changes, then you know that you can kind of push in, like on your computer, or push in on monitors, or push in on your walls, like up and down your walls, and see if you hear any differences. And then that gives you a ballpark idea that you probably have fields coming off of some of those devices.
Okay, yeah. So you were just using that long antenna there and just moving around and just listening for sound changes, and that was a very simple way just to see there's fields in this area, and maybe there's something you need to look deeper into that region.
That's right.
Okay.
So So the next thing, I'm probably going to do body voltage and like the GS units and walls a little bit later because it's a little more complex. I've got a few other kind of fun stuff here. I've got, this is a Geiger counter. It's just in my nutcase. But I've got a really old school ghost meter. This is one of my first meters I ever bought. And this all this does is measure magnetic fields. And it just has like lights at the top that kind of, it's on right now, but it kind of tells you green, yellow, red, like depending on the milligauss that you're picking up. I could probably show you how this works more effectively by producing a magnetic field. So I have a fan right here that puts out a pretty big field, magnetic field. Now, when I say magnetic field, this is like one of many of the EMFs. I'll just explain this really simply. It's a really easy analogy for people to get. So if you're at a water faucet and you have the water off, you know, no water is flowing through it, there's a pressure behind it, right? And that pressure behind it is the electric field. And I haven't shown you anything about electric fields at this point, but everything's producing electric field coming off our power grid, and it goes to the source and stops at the source. Unless you turn it on, if you turn it on, now you've got a magnetic field with your electrical field. And the magnetic field usually comes out into a space around either a wire or device. Like right here, this is my fan unit. Mm-hmm. So this thing here, probably if I have it on high, if the fan's running high, it'll probably produce like a 5-foot field, a 5-foot radius field in all directions through matter, through my body. It's producing a field about 5 feet away from the source if I had it on high. If I have it on low, it might go down more, maybe 4, 3, 2 feet. So, you know, I cringe a little bit thinking like, you know, parents that they put this thing in a child's bedroom and they put this right near their sleeping space.
Hmm.
And they might have it on and they're putting their baby even in a magnetic field all night long. Or even like a lot of parents like to use humidifiers if it's really dry. Same thing. Like some of these devices put out giant fields. And even though the parent thinks, oh, I'm doing the right thing by putting more water in the air or cleaning out the air more, which can be beneficial, not saying it's not, but the location of where you're using these devices is very important for your biology.
And have you even found even particular device brands, like types or models could be quite different?
You know, to be quite honest, it really doesn't matter for the brand. It's the design of the object. Like some of the worst offenders I've seen are some of the cheapest devices that you can just get, like just a typical fan that you plug into a wall. Really, like, I want to point this out for you guys. See here, this is a two-pronged, and I'll put it against my shirt so you can see it. It's a two-pronged, connector.
Yeah,
and it is lacking the ground. There's no ground. So when you have something ungrounded, you produce more fields, and it's more of a problem. So you're not like, you know, pulling, you're not grounding the device to make it better. So I'll show you in a few minutes here, but right now I'm sitting in electric field because of this wire. This wire right here, I'm touching an electric field because, like I said, it's like the water faucet. I have it plugged into the wall that's creating the energy to the device. The device is shut down just like the water faucet is shut down, so it's not producing the magnetic field. Mm-hmm. So if you followed all that, you've got a really good understanding of why some people that look like nutcases will like pull out plugs from their walls when they sleep at night. Because they know they're going to be sleeping like maybe with an electric wire right behind their bed or close to them that you could actually be pulling them into an electric field. And there's many studies that show detrimental effects. I mean, there's one study I was reading a few months ago. It's an older study, but it shows that there's melatonin loss even in electric fields when you're in an electric field. So if you have something closer to your head where your pineal gland is, it's producing the melatonin. At night when you're sleeping, and melatonin's super, super amazing for your regenerative processes. And if you're lacking that and you lack that on a continuous basis every night you sleep, then you're not getting the regeneration, the benefit all the biology benefits that go along with it all.
Mm.
So let me turn this, if you, or go ahead, Yari.
No, because I also think the one point I can I imagine is that most of the people listening and watching this are going to probably be living in towns and cities that are congested. So it means you live in an apartment or flats or terraced housing, and so that you've got lots of people around you, and they've got their devices on and their computers, their TVs, their routers.
And it is really that, like that last one, the radio frequency specifically is just, it's unbound, it's in the air, it's very hard to control. It has like a square root fall off property from the source as well. But once it gets out, it's like you could be in an apartment where both neighbors on both sides of you have your radio frequency pulsing you from the Wi-Fi router. And then you've got a wall of smart meters, right? Which also produce like really stronger, you know, ranges and more detrimental stuff. Like it's all detrimental, but like more higher intensity even. And then you've got like potential that you could just be living within a, you know, half mile or close to different kinds of phone towers. Like I've got a police department that's, you know, 3 miles away, and they've got their own specific RF systems off their police department for what they need to do. And, you know, if I were like within, you know, a few blocks of that, I get my police protection, but then now I'm being on a daily basis having my biology compromised. And same with all the workers there that work there every day. It's like, I want to protect our whole community, firefighters, everyone at the hospital's like a magnet for this stuff now. Like it's almost inescapable.
Yeah. Okay. But let's try to get back to the Geiger meter then. Let's get back to testing.
So Geiger meter, we won't do anything with that. It is what it is. Yes. I just had it in there just if as a fun, like I said, I buy fun things. I even bought a little like $10 microscope just to see things close up and start looking. So I'm like I like the little gadgets and like experimenting and just looking at things. And so I've got, like I said, I have this meter. You can see it's got the green light on it.
Mm-hmm.
Now I'll turn this on. All right. So interesting. Oh, there we go. It's here.
Slow it down. Is it?
Here, I'll pull it up so you can see. Yeah. But if you look here, you can see like the field, like it's going into the red about 6 inches away. And then as I pull away from it, you see the square root fall off from it. Mm-hmm. Now it is pulsing here. This is on medium. See if if I pull it up to high, I don't know if you're catching that.
You drop it, yeah, there, I just seen
it. Okay. So you can see what's going on. I don't want to have this on too long or I'm going to actually get tinnitus.
Yeah.
But as I go in and out from it, you can see how the field is coming in and out with that. And this is just testing the magnetic field around it. Yeah. Now this meter is a super cheap meter and also a super blunt meter. It only goes up to 20 milligauss. And that hits into the red. And what's funny is that like, if you know nothing of these things, you'll be like, oh, well, I don't think this is a problem, even at 10 milligauss where it's in the yellow. But guess what, guys? Even 1 milligauss in many people is a problem, especially people with electrosensitivity and EHS. And 2 milligauss, and like at the 2 milligauss range, I mean, this goes back to Robert Becker. Even at 2 milligauss, there's detrimental effects from these fields to your biology. I won't get into the biology because it's more about like just showing the meters. But you see something like this, and it's a little misleading because you're like, "Oh, 1.5 milligauss is green," but no. If it depends on what paradigm you believe. Do you believe Robert Becker? Do you believe all the, you know, thousands upon thousands of studies that we put up in the library? Showing that it doesn't take much magnetic or electrical field to see biological significance. And it's also the not just the intensity that I'm talking about in the milligauss range, but the frequency of the Hertz rate, but then also the frequency of exposure, just the amount of exposure a person gets to this throughout their day. So if I just turn on that fan for 5 minutes at, you know, I was probably touching it at probably around, well, I can test with another meter to see really what's going on, how high this goes up to. So this is the tri-field meter.
Okay, this is a common one that I hear about in the EMF community too.
Yeah, this one does all three. That's why it's called the tri-field. It does the three forms of electromagnetic radiation that people generally talk about, even though there are actually more EMF sources, for instance.
So what are those three, Scott?
So you have the magnetic field, like I talked to you about. That's when you turn the faucet on, the water comes out, as the analogy. Then you have the electric field. And the electric field is what's coming through the thing up it, like from the wall into this. It's plugged in. So I really can't show you well. I'm going to put this up on my leg. Maybe you can see it. Oh, yeah, that's going to be fine. So I have it. So I showed you the magnetic field. It has no magnetic field. So I'm perfectly safe at the moment, am I?
Because
I've got an electric field coming into me right now. So I'm actually being hit with an electric field, because it's plugged into the wall and it's also ungrounded. So it produces a better electric field. I'll show this. Can you see this?
Can you see this? Little.
I'll pull it up.
So right now you've got the tri-field set to testing electric fields.
Yeah, this is a fun video, isn't it? Okay. So, you can see there now. See the electric?
The needle's moved now. Yeah.
Yeah, so I have the meter close to the wire. So when I pull it,
There we go, it just drops off. So as you pull the meter to the wire,
I get an electric field around this cord. And the shielding of how these devices are shielded from electromagnetics is another component of mitigation. Like you might have some products that are shielded really well and other products that are just really horribly shielded. I'll just go ahead and say this. I have several salt lamps, and one of the salt lamps I had not only had a dimmer switch on it, which causes more resistance in the line and pushes out fields more, but that particular one also was a two-pronged. It was ungrounded, and it was plugged into an outlet for some reason. When I had it in one outlet in my house back up in Seattle, I was getting an electric field through my hallway behind where that wire was. It was producing a pretty darn good electric field just because of my specific situation in my home in that particular outlet, because that thing was ungrounded, had bad shielding on the wire. The salt lamp was producing this giant electrical field. So
the benefits of being in that salt lamp lighting and thinking it sort of looks healthy, but it was electrically EMF wise terrible for you. So
I'm not gonna say anything. Like if whatever lamp it is, like it didn't have to be the salt lamp.
It's just a great example that it could be that someone goes and buys something that they think is healthy, but the wiring could have been an issue, but as you mentioned, it could have been any commercial lamp. Just doesn't have to be a solid lamp. But that's such a good point. Yeah.
Yeah. It's not just the wiring. It's what you plug it into, the wiring itself in the home, because your wiring, even let's say I had a really good wired device, but I plug it into bad wiring in the home, then there you go. It can still cause a problem. Okay. So it's real. That's why this is a stupidly complex issue, because everyone wants to do everything right and be as safe as possible. But, you know, we have people that live in homes that are from the 1920s, and the wiring could be completely unshielded in there in the walls. And, you know, it's like the list goes on and on and on. That's why the building biologist understands all the subtle issues, all the tiny issues with all the stuff going on through the whole home. And also just how even, the electrician wired things, like even in modern homes, some of the lights, you know, they overhead lights, they put in strips like in the house. I think I mentioned this in the last video, but if you pull apart the neutral and the hot, and as you pull them apart farther and farther and farther, you actually get a larger like electrical or magnetic field separation. So you can have spaces just being flooded in a magnetic field. I've seen that in multiple homes that I've gone into. Just taking this meter, you know, my tri-field here, and just put it on regular. This is like, I call it the blunt magnetic field mode, because it goes from 1 to 100 milligauss. And, you know, like if I turn this on.
So now you're testing the magnetic field.
Yeah, I'm at 2 milligauss right here.
Yeah, that's more sensitive than that first one, the Geiger meter.
Yes, it's a little more sensitive, and it kind of I like the needle because it at least lets me know kind of where it's popping around and what I can see. But when I pull it away, okay, I'm at 1.5 milligauss. But, you know, as I pull it back toward it, it kind of pops up here. It's now back up to almost 2.5. So as you can see, if I pull it down here where the fan's coming out again, you can see it just really, really pinging high.
Yeah, so I've noticed that where if you had it on the top of the fan, the needle doesn't move as fast. But as soon as you put it further into the middle, or like you had it even lower there, that needle just went bananas. So
it's the emission source of where the fan itself is generating where it's from. So nice thing about at least this one that I just happened to randomly get, you know, the fan is at the base. So at least like it's typically going to be, the magnetic fields are going to be more around your feet, almost like a vacuum cleaner, right? Mm-hmm. So when you're using a vacuum, actually vacuum cleaners are another big one. So let's get back to this a little bit. So I was talking, so like I said, there's the magnetic field in this, there's the electric field. And then the last one on the tri-field meter, this is the 100XE, I believe that's the model. it's true. It has a radio microwave setting over here. This is I don't like this meter for measuring any radio frequency, except for maybe when a microwave's on, an actual microwave oven, because this is a very like wide meter, and it tells you like or maybe if I'm under a cell phone tower that's pretty strong. Let's say the cell phone tower is putting out about 30 milliwatts per square meter, right? If you're kind of like aligned with a cell phone tower and you're getting really strong, like you're being blasted with radio frequency, then this meter you can use. But if you try to like just pick up normal radio frequency in your home, like from a Wi-Fi router, maybe like 10 feet away from a Wi-Fi router or something like that, this probably won't, the dial won't even move on it.
Okay, so that's why you don't like it for sensitivity for the radio frequency component.
It's way too blunt, and some of these, like for instance, I say this through my own personal experience, because I get tinnitus typically if I'm, this is a really good measurement stick for my tinnitus, and I tell this to people because I have my internal sensors that are comparing to what I'm actually seeing, and I've done this for like 10 years. So if I, for instance, if I have put my body in a 10 milligauss magnetic or electric field for about 10 minutes or more, I'm guaranteed to get tinnitus. If I put myself into about a 3 milliwatt per square meter radio frequency area or volume for about 10 minutes, the same thing happens. So it's kind of like I can kind of like gauge the amount of intensity that's triggering my tinnitus based on the intensity of either the magnetic field, the electric field, or the radio frequency field, if you follow all that. Mm-hmm. So when you measure something like this, like if I'm trying to measure 3 milliwatts per square meter with this, this needle won't even like go up at all. It'll go like at 0.03. It will just barely even fluctuate. But 3 milliwatts per square meter is a very strong radio frequency field. I mean, very, very strong. And if I were in that for like 8 hours a day, at the end of the day, I'd feel like I need to just hit the bed and I'm gone for the day. That's how it affects me, at least. Okay. And other people, they might not have any effect whatsoever. They might not get right. So that's why I'm saying, like, my internal sensors are really, over long periods of time, have been really effective in helping me know, what's going on with why the intensity is bad for me. So I figure I'm just being pummeled, right? Well, we're all being pummeled these days with everything. But at least with the electrical and magnetic fields, like we can, it's really easy to get out of those fields. As you can see, I just pulled it back And,
yeah, it's just a distance thing.
Yeah, it's a distance thing. And once you're out of the distance, you're pretty much okay. Now, you are still near the power grid, and these things are huge, huge wavelengths. So you are being hit just all the time being in a power grid with fields from everywhere, regardless. And in addition to the flows of the dirty electricity and the possible electricity dumping that they're doing in your localized area, like down the street from where I live, there's like two lines, diagonal lines going into the ground out that area. And actually, when I was driving by in my truck, that's kind of what I was testing. And sure enough, as I was passing where those lines were, I was getting a stronger listen. I could hear more of the electricity coming through the AM radio. When you get closer to those, it's pretty correlated pretty well with the hearing of that. So, I guess that would be maybe a good segue if you want me to show you dirty electricity just from my wall here.
Sure. What, so are you going to use that device, the tri-field, or you want to use it? Yeah. So use the tri-field for the dirty electricity concerns.
Yeah. Pretty much like if a building biologist were to come out, they would measure all these little hot spots with your magnetic fields when things are on. So I'd measure lighting, I'd measure walls, I'd measure all my devices, my computers, everything, right? Even monitors, like it's very important to measure the magnetic and the electrical fields with those, because there could be a problem, like here's a quick example, like a monitor might be broken internally, the gadgets, and it could just be now producing a large field of some type. Just because it's the monitor is gone, but an internal component's gone bad with it. So even over time, it's good to like still like every month or two, I go through the home and just like do a sweep and measure things just to, just as a precaution to say, okay, did anything change in that time?
Okay. So that's the benefit of the tri-field.
That's the magnetic field. Also, the tri-field has a very sensitive magnetic part on it as well. And this is very useful for like scanning. Like you can see it. Well, you can't see it because the camera's far away. But sweeping it up next to the wall, or like putting it next to a computer like this, you can see how the magnetic
moving.
That's very sensitive. Like it tells you a very sensitive magnetic field, like within 1 to 3 milligauss. Which is very useful because if you want to find where wires are on a wall even, or like where you might get fields like even on your floor, you can kind of like scan along places and see where wires are in your floor and everything like that. So you might want to even reconsider positioning of your beds, like just based on knowing where the lines are running under your floor, which is useful.
Cool. So that's what the tri-field's for.
That's tri-field. So now I'm going to get back into my net case and get out this guy. This is a Stetsurizer meter, which is called a microsurge meter. And all this is measuring certain frequencies of dirty electricity that are flowing through your walls to see what you're at. And they measure this, what's called a GS unit, which is actually a gram Stetzer unit. This is very similar to the GreenWave meter and that company that has also GreenWave filters for trying to block out dirty electricity. This is what the filters actually look like.
Is that a GreenWave, that one?
This is a Stetzer filter, a Gram Stetzer filter.
Okay, great. So, you educated me there too that you get GreenWave testing device and a GreenWave filter, and this is another company.
Yeah,
it does the same.
Yeah, like I said in the last video, these can be a hit or miss because of how power flows, and like these will produce a larger magnet. Like there's whole videos and stuff you can just like look up on and make your own decision if you think it's useful or not. But they, when you plug them into a wall, they'll actually produce a magnetic field around the filter itself.
Okay.
Yeah, and because what it's trying to do is it's trying to eliminate the certain frequencies that are known to be more dangerous to our biology. So, and that's through the dirty electricity.
And so when you did mention that in the last interview we did, and that's why it was maybe not if you should use GreenWave filters, but if someone was really interested from a testing perspective, this is when you would suggest get one of these. This is the benefit of these devices now before buying the filters.
Yeah. So, the I could probably move the I'm going to move the camera.
Okay.
This is fun. Hopefully the audience will. Okay. So you can see
14.3 or 14.
No,
is it 100?
That's actually 100. Yeah. That's okay. Actually 149, sorry. Which is actually not that good. According to their measurements, you want this number like a 40 or under.
Wow. Okay. So that's quite a difference.
Yeah. So you can see it will kind of bounce around there because it's kind of bouncing between 120 and 150. And the reason why is that, like I said, most of my power is going through that other room.
Where the computers are.
Those computers, right. And then at those computers, did I mess up this camera a lot? No, let's see. That's pretty good. So, yeah, like I'm getting roughly like 140 to 150 on average. And as you can tell, I had this Stetzerizer in that wall right there. I'll do this. I don't think this will affect the computer. Okay. I'm going to plug it back in. I unplugged it because I had the computer you're listening to this on is pulling juice, right? And now it's down to like 115 instead of 150.
So all you did was unplug the power to the computer there and it's the changed power. The outlet.
Yeah. Power. So now the power being drawn to that outlet is like, you know, 30, 40 less than it used to be. Now, if I put the Stetzerizer filter in it.
So this is trying to filter the dirty electricity.
Yeah, now it's going to try to filter the dirty electricity in that area. And now look where I'm at.
Oh, wow. That's now gone to 22.
Yeah, that's right. So now I'm under 40, which is way safer levels, according to, like, you know, again, it's your paradigm. Go ahead and do your own research. And we're not telling you that you got to do this, but...
So for you, in your particular situation, so do you believe that with that filter now, it would be a good idea to leave that Stetzer filter in that particular outlet because you got that drop?
It really depends on if people are feeling it and sensing it in the proximity to the walls that they put themselves in. Like if I were sitting like at a computer and I was right up next to the wall. Then I'm just getting more dirty electricity potential right into my system. So I think that if you do it right and your wires are right, are correct and your shielding's good and it's a bigger problem because like what we're seeing in the wall right now, here's a good example. What we're seeing in the wall right now at 150 without the filter, that number could be, if I turn on my third computer in the office, that 150 could go up to a 450, you know, because it's drawing way more power. Or let's say a neighbor, they're feeding power back to the power company with their solar panels, and that inverter comes on at a certain time of day, then that number could go from a 450 up to a 1,700 or even a 2,000 or higher. When that thing's on and it's being filtered through the neighborhood, and I happen to live in a place where it's being filtered through. So it's a real problem. Like it's, people aren't thinking of these things. And now that we know this, these things are affecting our health and it's kind of like a crap. It's a Russian roulette. It is Russian roulette. Like where you live, what your neighbors are doing around you, you know, if people had more awareness and there were more restrictions put in to minimize the power dumping, I believe over in England there, they are not allowed to power dump into the ground to get that power back to the power company. Like you actually have to have run a line that is another line that goes back to the power company. From what I've read. If that's the case, you probably have less dirty electricity. Like depending on the country you live in, you might have less dirty electricity potential compared to other places where they have more dumping and it's more like loose energy everywhere.
Mm. So yeah, and this is where depending where someone is on the electrosensitivity spectrum,
right.
If they were very, very sensitive, these are points that they would probably have to start researching.
Right. And it's, again, it's like a band of frequencies with this dirty electricity that look like are detrimental to humans. So there's certain frequencies that are not as detrimental. There's other frequencies that are way more detrimental. And that's where the science really needs to start shining here in the next 10 years, in my opinion, where we start saying, at this frequency, you know, in these bands, this is what, here's the things we're seeing and the problems going on. But it's just going to be a long road to like get people, like I'd rather side on like
caution.
Yeah, caution versus like, oh, let's just randomly live in these fluid juices of energy and just be pulled into all of it. So let's push on with this video a little faster here. So
yeah, let's go for it. Sorry.
You, all the audience members. So I'll just pull out, this is a cornet.
This is the biggie. I always hear about this one.
Yeah, this isn't the one, the 88T. Okay. So there's lots of models of this. This happens to be the 78S. The 88T, I have a friend that's using it to mitigate her place at the moment. I loaned it to her for over a week now, so I should get it back. But the 88T, the only difference between the 78S and the 88T is this is not like a tri-field like this. This is measuring magnetic, also the sensitive magnetic, like this one does. This also then does not measure electrical EMF on the 78, but the 88T is like this and it does all of it, but it also, in my opinion, you know, does the sensitivity for the radio frequency that you're more looking for as a ballpark of what's going on, like with Wi-Fi routers, with your smart meter, with other things that are producing some radio frequency, but you kind of want to get an idea of where maybe the radio frequency is coming from. So if you look at the back of this, you can see that there's two antennas in this and showing it in the back. So on this side over here, which is...
So that's a label on the back that's showing...
Yeah, it's a label on the back. It shows you where the antennas are at. One of them is doing the magnetic field or the electrical field if you also have the 88T version of this. And this one over here is doing the radio frequency antenna for measuring radio frequencies. So it is like single axis, so you kind of have to like move it and kind of alter it around to see where the radio frequency might be coming in.
So you just move that unit around in the air.
Yeah, I kind of move it like kind of like this, like kind of at a slower rate,
and then slowly just rotate it. Yeah. Mm-hmm,
and hold it like for a good 10-15 seconds, just to see like, okay, am I getting what I'm getting? Because radio frequency is harder to get an understanding of until you ramp up and get enough experience with these things. So,
and this is even if you had it, you know, you raised the unit above your head or you had it on the floor, you'd have to play around and just keep moving. It sounds a bit like trying to pick up good signal on a radio station where you might move things around a room.
So, yeah, it's similar to that. And also, it's with radio frequency, it's understanding the physics a little bit. So, there is, again, like a square root fall off from the source. So if this is my Wi-Fi router, the closer I bring this meter to it, you'll see the intensity levels going up as you would expect. But let's say I go into a different room. If this was a Wi-Fi router and it's emitting in all directions, in all volumes, it's pushing out this radio frequency. This is like, it's like light. So it's like reflecting, absorbing, bouncing around. So it could make its way even like out a window, or it could make its way if you have an open door. If it's going through materials, it's being somewhat absorbed into those materials. So if this was a Wi-Fi router, I would be absorbing that radiation into me. And then the person right on the other side of me would be getting a little less radiation because I'm helping either reflect it back or reflect it off and absorb it around. So in comparison to light, like if you think about light, our eyes are like this small, right? And the light that comes in is between 400 to 700 nanometers that we can actually perceive. So it's like little tiny, tiny, you know, wavelength compared to like this, you know, other really tiny, tiny wavelength. And our eye interprets that and that's how we can see. That's way different than like off a Wi-Fi router. Is you're talking like, you know, it's like this big, really this big to like maybe a couple feet. That's how big these wavelengths are.
Yeah, the amplitude.
Yeah. Mm. So because they're much larger, of course, that's why we can't see them because we don't have giant eyes that can interpret that.
And that's where the meets is, yeah, the testing kits come
this
in.
This is where our antenna length, right? Antenna length is helping us with pulling it in and trying to interpret for us and give us a number that's reasonable and also an intensity that's reasonable to get an idea of what is coming off these things. Now, this particular cornet, that I think a lot of people like to use this one because I think it's two, maybe threefold. It's really tiny. I like to use it because when I'm in public, sometimes I act like I'm on my cell phone and I like actually like
have it. It looks like the size of a common cell phone. Yeah. Like a smartphone.
Like I could be like, you know, incognito with my meter. Kind of like James Bond, right? Walking around and doing my thing. But, anyway, I've got, you know, people like it for that reason. They also like it because it's really easy. The moment you turn it on, you get it into this mode. Now, 0.0005 milliwatts per square meter is the baseline for this meter and even for the 88T. So like the cornets, like as you, well, actually it bounces. It's funny. The light goes off after about 10 seconds. So I'm going to turn it right back on again. It immediately goes into radio frequency mode. See if I can get it to change a little bit. Is that up to 7?
Yeah, it looks like it.
Yeah. So it's like 0.0006, 0.0005, 0.0007. So this amount of radio frequency is like nothing. And the reason why it went up and down a little bit is that there's even some, it's picking up some little bit of radio frequency even from probably the lines of the computer, that just a little bit of residual radio frequency being created off of the actual power lines, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
So if I put this radio, if I measure radio frequency in my walls, I might actually see a little more radio frequency right around the wires in the walls. So it's that sensitive. That's what's nice about it. It's really that sensitive. You can tell what's going on with radio frequency emissions, especially at a larger band range.
And so if someone's using this and they're concerned about the Wi-Fi router causing issues, is this, they'll be using the cornets in this case? And is this something?
I don't even think you need a meter. If you've got a Wi-Fi router, you've got issues.
Okay, there you go. So you don't need a testing device if you've got a Wi-Fi router. No,
I don't think so. Because like, standard issue routers, right? Like they're going to have, like I'm talking wireless routers, right? Not wired, but wireless routers. Well, actually, I'll take that back. Even if you have a wired router, it could be producing wireless radio frequency. So you have to, like, if you trust your company that you got your router from to have your wireless turned off in it, if it has a wireless ability in the router, you might be screwed. You might have shut it down, like the, let's say whatever is emitting from it, and you think it's shut down. In my opinion, you really don't know unless you have a meter to measure to know. That makes sense.
Yeah, but I guess anyone who's doing EMF awareness, that why don't you? I guess I get the sense of if you got Wi-Fi on in your house, don't even bother with a device because
Wi-Fi. Yeah, if you have Wi-Fi, why do you have Wi-Fi? You know you're causing problems. I mean, it's like, do you have a smart meter that's emitting radio frequency? Why do you have that? Go back to an analog one. Yeah. So, or like limit the use, like have the wireless router on only for a period of time. Shut it down. Make sure you shut it down as much as you can, like when it's not in use. And then you're helping your neighbors too, right? I mean, here's a perfect example. Laptop, you can do a search to see how, like, what routers you can connect to in your neighborhood.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
you're picking up their signal. If you're picking up their signal, you don't think your body can pick up that signal?
So I guess that would be another way. Just use the free Wi-Fi within a laptop to see if maybe you've turned off as much as you can in your property, but it could be an issue for you in that sense.
Yeah, I want to actually segue just for about a minute here and talk about mobile phones, because the same thing with a mobile phone. If you see the number of bars on your mobile phone, if it's strong, if it's really high, that means that you have very strong connection. That means you have probably some mobile phone tower that's maybe within, you know, very close proximity to you because you have high bars. Now, the problem is if you have low bars, then when you establish a connection on your phone, you're creating all this extra intensity, this extra power, you know, wattage that has to be connected to maintain that signal between that tower and your phone with low bars because you have very bad connection. So you're actually getting a higher milliwatts per square meter into your body when you're holding this to your head, which you should not be, or, you know, even touching it. You're getting it into your body. The lower the bars, the worse things are, like when you're talking, actively talking on a mobile phone. So again, like, even though, yeah, I'm really far away from a cell phone tower, everything's great, and I'm out on the farm, away from everyone, and I'm talking 5 hours a day on my mobile phone, that's way, way, way worse situation, potentially, than a person being maybe within a mile of a tower, and now that there's a really good connection, but there's not that massive intensity going right to your hand or to your head or to your body. That makes sense.
So yeah, that would be another one. Use your phone as a testing device. And if you got poor signal, that's confirmation. Don't use it in that area.
Right. Yeah. Or if you use it. Oh, like use that very fall off away from your body.
Speakerphone away from the body.
Yes.
Yeah.
You know, Mercola just did a video like this last week, and he had a selfie stick. And he was like, you know, he was really passionate in that video too. It was great. And he was just like, keep this thing away from your head. You're talking about a microwave your head, guys, mitochondrial damage. So it's awesome. I'm glad, you know, major people are picking up on this.
I'll link to that in the show notes.
Forever, but yeah. Really now starting to focus on it for the public. Yeah.
Cool. So are you happy you've covered the core net? You've covered the Stites. Oh, I can never say that name. Stites.
Stetzer.
Stetzer. And then and the cornet. You're happy with covering the main points that you feel?
No, I did the radio frequency, and then like you can switch modes to go to magnetic field again. This is microtesla or milliwatts, I believe. Yeah, milligauss, not milliwatts. So milligauss. And then you could switch again to another mode, which is the really sensitivity, just like the tri-field. And then you switch back again, you back to radio frequency. But the cool thing about this, and I'll do this for you right now. Okay. You'll see this. Okay. So can you hear this?
I can, yeah. I can hear a noise.
Yes. So this is a sound, kind of like your radio. This is a sound mode for the bands, for the radio frequency and other sources coming through the cornet. So most people don't even know this exists. So I'm trying to like keep my speaker here up to the cornet. Yeah. So you can kind of hear the squealing a little bit.
Yeah.
But you can do a sweep. You can do a sweep again with the sound portion of this and get a ballpark idea of like, oh, I'm picking up like back in Seattle when I use this coming up on the top of the hill, there were two radio towers, a cell phone tower, and some other device. I didn't even know what it was. But for some reason, it was pulsing. It was going like that, coming through my house. And I was concerned about that pulse because I'm like, it's coming from somewhere up on that hill. And I would have never known that even existed because my meter was saying 0.0005 in my home. So I was getting that. So at that time, I bought a silver curtain and then put the curtain up along one wall, knowing where that source was coming from up on top of the hill. And when I put that curtain on there, and then I remeasured that, went to like, it was like very tiny. Wow. So I knew that I wasn't getting, whatever that source was getting blocked out.
So that's definitely, it sounds like an advanced benefit of using that device because you get the sound portion that maybe the numbers aren't going to be telling you the full story.
Yeah. And like, I have no idea or not, like, again, I'm just citing on caution. I have no idea or not if that pulse was detrimental or not to my body, but I'm going to say, oh, if I can block it out in my thing that I bought, you know, happened to block it out and it sounds better, you know, I could block it out really cheaply with certain materials. So I would go try that out and see blocking out and then make the decision, do I want to have this up all the time or, you know, make it more like a curtain where I could have it, you know, not visible certain times of the day or not. Like, you know, it gets into all these other issues with, like, when you mitigate, how do you want your home to look? Like, just the decor. Because that can a lot of times trump, like, oh, well, maybe I want it to actually look really pretty, but I still want to get hit with microwaves.
Yeah. So you go, yeah, and that's what you said with the building biologist. You go do all this testing, but you're going to make decisions at the end of the day.
Yeah. Yeah. It's almost like I want like an Iron Man technology wall that isn't actually technology, or something that can, like, inside the walls, like, you can put up your mitigation. Like, I'm talking like if I had, you know, billions of dollars to just waste, you could just like put stuff all through your walls in your house. And then it's like, when you want to make sure everything's blocked out, then, you know, you can have things blocked out versus not. But you know, that's just wishful thinking.
Okay. So now with Cornets, anything else with it?
That pretty much covers it. I mean, like I said, it's just getting used to like how you use it and where those frequencies are coming from. But it gives you a good idea. I would want to say that check with like the WHO standards, like the bioinitiative standards, for what other countries are doing and what radio emissions they allow. Because if I start seeing like 0.01 or higher, or I know that the damaging effects, at least in some of the biological literature, is starting to show that it doesn't take much radio frequency intensity to show biological effects. So that's where it kind of gets sketchy and gray, and like you know, people can, you know, develop fears like around this. I don't want that at all, right? Yeah. I want just, it's like information to me. It should not be fear invoking. It's like we've been living with these things for a while. You know, we are, it's kind of like Russian roulette. We are around these things, but don't, like, I don't let the emotional aspect get to me. I just go, is there a real big hotspot? If I'm really putting myself in massive fields all the time, then just like anything, you know, I go and I reduce it. If I, you know, I don't eat organic food every single day of my life. Sometimes I'll eat, you know, conventional food if I happen to be in that situation. So, am I going to let that bother me? You know, I could fear myself to death on any issue. It could be food. It could be electromagnetics. It could be anything. It's like, don't go down that path. Like, just be reasonable. And, you know, my approach is I like to be reasonable, you know, kill, mitigate, get rid of all the big, huge offenders first and foremost. Right.
And, sorry, I was just trying to think. There was something that popped up with, don't worry. So I was just thinking with the Cornets. So you could decide either get the Tri-Field or the Cornets, but it sounds like the Cornets sort of trumps the Tri-Field in a sense. That's exactly what I was thinking. So when you were talking these values too, I'm just thinking if a beginner goes, all right, I'll get a Cornet, but does the Cornet itself come with literature that says you should be looking for these values? Or is this something you have to research on your own?
I can't actually remember if they provide the material. I'm sure there is probably literature there somewhere, like saying, like, because they do have along the side, right here on the Cornet, they have the yellow. You can see it there, the red at the top, the yellow and the green. So they're already telling you on the meter what they are deeming as problematic.
Safe. Okay.
Right. But like, if you use that, like I said, you can go down this rabbit hole of like, making yourself fearful over this stuff. That's not the intent here. The intent here is know that we are being hit with this all the time. And it's really, I think, more about personal behaviors and the use of it and just the prolonged use that people have of it. Like, if I put my mobile phone back in my pocket and it's always hitting the cell phone tower every 10 seconds, you know, that's no good, because you just got, maybe let's say you walked for 5 hours somewhere and you've got your cell phone back there. You've just got 5 hours of radiation. That's worse than, my opinion, could be worse than seeing this number on here just for a minute, right? Because you're talking prolonged intensity or prolonged frequency exposure versus just getting hit blasted once with it. It's like turning on a hairdryer. Turn on a hairdryer, it produces a magnetic field. You're not drying your hair for 5 hours. You're drying your hair for 5 minutes.
Yeah. So even though if you test your, that's a great example. So you go and you're doing all this testing everything in your home, and you think, oh no, my hair dryer is terrible. but it's the situation. Well, all hair dryers are probably going to be like that.
Yes.
As well, and as you mentioned, if you're going to use it, think of how long the duration period, and you're not exposing yourself unless you're very, very electrosensitive. Then you might go, oh, even a minute of exposure triggers a symptom in me. And so I know, unfortunately, I can't use it. But if you don't get that stuff, then you still can practically use your hairdryer. So.
Right. So this kind of like pulls into EMF hygiene. Like knowing you have a hairdryer now, you're forced to make a decision. I use the hairdryer or I don't use the hairdryer and I do something else. Or as I use the hairdryer, I implement my EMF hygiene and I make sure that thing is far away from my brain tissues when I'm using it, right? Mm-hmm. So you are willingly giving yourself exposure to these things and you're taking a gamble every time you're doing it. But again, that doesn't have to be fear invoking. That's just the way the nature of the universe works. that's how, I tell this to people. It's like, I'm not here to be the bad guy to let you know all this information that could be damaging your health. I'm here to just let you know, this is how nature set up the universe. And if we pulse with alternating current, in the scientific literature, there's strong evidence that alternating currents at higher intensities and longer frequency use is going to be a problem to your health long-term by damaging your mitochondria. And that's in addition to the AC, we've got the radio frequency now, which is like pulsed modulated information that's like this choppy waveform. It's not this nice smooth waveform that's a little more expected to the body. Now we've like got all this information packets and all this like crazy chopping of waves hitting our body. That's it's unexpected signaling. That's what it appears to be in the literature. So it's like you want to like that's kind of what the dirty electricity is doing. It's trying to filter out the stuff our body, what looks like our body doesn't appreciate, and then go back into the natural EMFs of the sun or grounding that the body does expect. And I think there's some people I know personally from my anecdotal experiences that when they have gotten into the sun and they're using the sun more frequently and using grounding more frequently, then their electro hypersensitivity or their just electrosensitivities diminish a bit or even start to help repair themselves because they're doing what the body's expecting and getting that balance and even the circadian rhythm and the timing and everything is starting to come back in balance. And then it's also their behaviors with these unexpected signalings that they're not exposing themselves personally to as much.
Mm-hmm. All right. Any other tools you've got in your kit there?
Yeah, I've got, this is called just a cell sensor. It's also just magnetic field, very much like this one, very much like the Cornette's magnetic field and very much like the Tri-Field. Most of the differences between these meters also is the bands they measure. So for the Cornette, like I didn't even say specifically, I think this measures up to 8 gigahertz, which is fairly high. I mean, 8 gigahertz is, most things are kind of in the 1 gigahertz, like for cell phones, for microwaves and like your cable boxes and your Wi-Fi. Most of these things are like typically between like 600 megahertz up to like 3 or 4, even 5 gigahertz. So because this goes up to 8 gigahertz, it can measure a broader range of these radio frequencies. So with the Cornette, that's nice in that sense. Of course, when you measure magnetic fields and the range of frequencies that's measuring down to, you're measuring down like to the power grid, 60 hertz, 50 hertz stuff, just off your all the electronics and everything. So like, again, this is like more of a cheaper knocked off version of just magnetic field. This is just magnetic field. Then the last one I really want to talk about is body voltage. So I have a body voltage meter here. And just like, again, like you don't want to get like power, just stray voltage coming through your body. this measures that, and this is very much like a multimeter. So this is just a very fancy multimeter, and this carries a little bit of a risk when using this device. I even don't like to use it sometimes if I go over to somebody else's house without having this, which is a plug tester. So I can plug this into a wall to see if the outlet is properly wired, because I'm going to be plugging this end of this meter into the wall, and really these two top prongs for the neutral and the hot are not active in this plug. It's just the ground wire is active in it. So I'm really grounding myself when I plug this thing in. And because I'm grounding myself, I can see the difference in the volt, the body volt, based on my body, I can see the difference in the voltage in my environment as it's going through my body. So,
and Scott, this is the one that I typically see when people test grounding units, is it?
Yeah, you'll see this. So like, as you can see right now,
We can't really see on the video screen too well, unfortunately.
I'll put it here so you can see.
Might need to just turn it a bit to the lights.
All right. Did you see that?
Other way? Sorry. I think... there we go. I just saw two. Yeah, I can see 2, 6, 2. Yeah.
Okay. The two, it's like 0.224, right? Okay. Uh-huh. That right there, I have it on I have it on millivolts versus volts. So we want to see this number, like the residual, like it's actually touching the ground. I need to take this off the ground. We're seeing this like at 0.3 millivolts just in the home in here right now, which is actually not great. I want to see that number lower. Now it went down to 0.2, which is better. But if I put this up on just volts like this, you'll see it will be like
0.3 volts. Yeah.
Right. So like a good way to think about it is like maybe like a 9-volt battery. This is just a little energy compared to like a 9-volt battery. So what's cool about this is that if I touch the metal antenna, it can actually tell me how many volts are going through my body. And as you can see, there's 1.43 volts going through my body just because I'm grounded to the wall. The ground actually isn't zeroed out in my wall because there's a lot of power flow going through this circuit. So that's why we're seeing this when I unground myself and when I pull off the antenna and put it down, I'm not touching it. It drops way back down again. That was like 0.1. Yeah, so that's almost zeroed out. That's almost zeroed out in volts. Yeah. So I touch it again, and as I touch it, like right now, you can see it drives back up to 1.3 volts. So the interesting thing about this meter is that you can use it to, like, as I'm touching the computer, or I touch different devices, or I touch the screen. You know, if there's a change in the voltage, it can tell me some stray voltage, like other devices could be pulling more voltage into my body. Now, the reason why this computer is not pulling extra voltage into my body is because it's grounded. It's got a three-pronged plug and into the wall right there at this moment. So if I unplug this three-pronged plug from my computer, the laptop that we're actively using here, and now we can see the meter.
Yeah, I want to see
if I touch the computer. Let's see what happens if I touch the computer.
Okay, so you're on one.
Nothing's happening.
Oh, not too bad.
Yeah. So luckily, this brand new computer I just bought is not giving me any like extra voltage out of it, which is great.
But that's exactly where I've seen it in other videos where you would have a grounding mat on a workstation, yeah, and you know you would see someone even just hover their hand above a keyboard and you would see the voltage meter go up, and that's what this device is.
That's right. Yeah. And like there's certain this is really, I would recommend, if I recommend anything, this for my own family, is I've gone through and measured the spaces, especially like my bed, right? Places that you would be spending a lot of time in the office, in the bed, things like that, where, you know, there could be excess stray voltage just coming through those spaces. And a good example of this is in my kitchen. I can't like bring this all the way over because I have it all hardwired, but in my kitchen, I've got electric water heater under the ground, kind of like under a staircase off the side of my kitchen. And right when I'm standing in that spot, it goes up to about 5 volts in that spot.
Okay, so you're not even touching any electrics. It's just there's voltage in your body that suddenly just appears there.
Yep, just appears there. When I have this plugged in and then I use the antenna and I'm walking through the space, there's an extra 5 volts in that one location. And that has a very fast fall off from around that water heater underneath the ground. So if I like walk like even 2 feet one direction or the other, it's already down to like 1 volt again.
Hmm.
And then if I there's certain hotspots that I've identified with this body voltage meter, which is nice because then you can go, okay, well, it's maybe wired incorrectly, right? In the home, like there's certain homes that have the lighting and the electrical circuits on the same breaker at the circuit breaker panel. And I've seen some places where when that happens, when they have a lot of things on the same circuit breaker, that can create some stray voltage or extra voltage in certain spaces based where the wiring is going in the home and stuff like that. So like typically most homes have to be up to code, right? Like they'll have lights on one circuit breaker, the plugs on another circuit breaker, and then there's not like a sharing. So a lot of this does just have to do with how the wiring was constructed in the home. If you have different pullings of things. There's also really weird stuff that can happen too, even like with magnetic fields with everything.
To me, it just comes back around again. It can get so complicated, and so you would need like a building biologist just to put this all together and give you sort of some sort of informed consent, clear direction, saying, right, this is maybe what you need to do. This is of high importance, or this is, don't worry about this.
It's tough because like some of it is embedded to the way the space is laid out and the electrical connections in the home and how the wiring is. And even like there's even situations where like magnetic fields can jump from like a one device onto like even a pipe, like a metal pipe, when certain things are on or off. So it gets pretty complex pretty fast because like in a lot of situations you have to test in different conditions, how things are being used. Just like I did with unplugging that from the wall and plugging it back in again. It's like you have to test both cases. Like knowing, here's another good example. For this laptop I just bought, what did I buy? I bought a wired keyboard for my laptop. Why did I do that? Because the components, I know you can't see this, but maybe you can see it. Well, it's okay. The components for the laptop are sitting right under the keyboard. So when I take my meters and measure along the top of my keyboard, I see a magnetic field coming off the keys. So if I'm spending an hour or two on a laptop just typing, I might not have any body voltage. That whole situation might be fine. But now I might actually be putting myself in a magnetic field because of where the components are underneath the keyboard. So that's why I have another keyboard I can plug in where I'm now typing and I don't have any magnetic field whatsoever.
Mm. All right. So we've come up on the hour mark now. Is there a way we can sort of do a summary of what we've gone through just to tie it in here? So to me, it sounds like if you're a newbie, watch out because this can get very heavy, very fast. And so it might actually just save you time, save you stress. Just get a professional in, let them do the screening, let them give you a report and you can make a decision. If you want to take it further, then to me, it sounds like, you've got to just know that there's three fields, radio frequency field, magnetic field, electric field. You want to be testing those. And in different
situations. Yeah, I'd also say body voltage.
Okay, that's like the four different tests that you're going to be looking for. Yeah. And in that case, there you might be able to get away with two devices, like a body voltage device and like either a tri-field or a cornet in this sense, it sounds like. And then, but it's, you know, I know you could probably get even more advanced because there's other devices out there, but is that a good summary of what we've probably gone over right now?
Yeah, it's a good summary. I just want to mention that we never talked about lighting also. And I only use incandescent lighting because my, like if you use LEDs or fluorescent lighting, you're actually producing some magnetic fields with them and other potential fields compared to the incandescent bulb. So that's even aside from the blue light, which is also another form of EMF. Like the blue light frequencies are really strong, super strong, and not very color balanced compared to incandescent, where you have more heat, right, from the incandescent. So you're getting more into the IR light, the infrared light. So I definitely like if you use LEDs or fluorescence using these meters and testing them, you'll find out really quickly that you'll want to probably go back to incandescent lighting.
Yeah. So lighting and don't put the Wi-Fi on.
Yeah. Don't put the Wi-Fi on and don't sleep with your head within a very far distance or short distance from a smart meter too, because yeah, a lot of people forget about that. Like they might clean up their whole house and they still have a smart meter on the back of their home or something, right? And they're still being hit with radio frequency. So
I can imagine the frustration where you've gone through all that trouble and financial expense and
yeah,
there's one device on the outside there.
Right.
Yeah.
So then you're looking at like, you know, there's a lot of ways to try to mitigate that as well as working with the power company to see if they can get you something better, go back to an analog meter. A lot of them do that program, which is it's becoming more and more frequent.
Mm. Okay. So from a device point of view, the common question people have asked, hopefully I think we've answered a lot of that today. Is there any other particular points again you want to just make when people ask the question about EMF and should they or shouldn't they get or any particular device? Hopefully I think we've covered most of the points.
Yeah, like I said, it's hard for people to like people that are just getting into this, I think, understand. Like it's really better to get a knowledge basis of what these things are doing if a person's interested in it. Because then like there's a really long learning curve to like getting a good feel for what's going on and getting comfortable with the devices. So depending on the type of personality and who you are specifically, like the building biologist might just be the best route to go, or just a friend. Like if you know somebody around you that's willing to just come over and poke around and say, hey, I think these things are going on, just to start, you know, getting you a feel for what's happening with the devices and maybe being more hands-on, that would save you all the money, right? Mm-hmm. And then because in some cases you like your home just might be a pretty darn good situation. So why spend the money when you don't need to? Mm-hmm. And then on top of it, you just know straight out certain devices will be emitting like either radio frequency or probably like anything with a fan in it, right, is going to have a pretty strong magnetic field when it's on. So just use your common sense and go, oh, this is an electronic device, whatever it is. Depending on how I'm using it, when I'm using it, make sure it's like in a spot that's better. But at the same time, you are taking a gamble because there could be other issues. There could be dirty electricity in the home big time. There could be a power line, you know, being dumped into, like a lot of these things you can spot and eventually see over time. Mm-hmm. So like once you ramp up and you have all the information, know all the potentials, but even in this day and age, we have transformers buried under the ground in certain places. We have wires outside in the yard. We have, you know, it's everywhere. So I like to be more thorough and more detailed. It doesn't, you know, invoke my fear at all. So I've found a transformer buried, you know, down the block that emits like a 60 to 80 milligauss field anywhere with that, when I'm within about 10 feet of that transformer underneath the earth, like in the earth. So anybody that's, say, playing in a park and there's a transformer and somebody's put a transformer in the ground and you just happen to go sunbathe, right, and lay down in that 60, 80 milligauss field for an hour, that's no bueno. So that's why I like to carry around at least like a little stupid device, you know, just as a second set of eyes, so I can see if I'm going to be spending a long time in a place, then at least I have a basic understanding of what that place is giving me.
Mm, yeah. Well, I definitely learned a lot again, Scott. I mean, wow, that was just information overload. And I think if I had to think of my own personal situation, probably I'd really wanted to go the full hog. It would be better for me just to get a consultant in, do the scan in like a living space and just say yay or nay. Like, is it high risk, medium risk, or low risk? And if it is high risk, potential, which rooms and what you can actually do to mitigate, because there's so many variables in this factor. It's a bit like a doctor reading blood tests, you know, and looking at all the data points and then just being like, actually, in your situation, don't worry about this, or, you know, whatever. So.
Yeah, just think about this little thing. Let's say we were living in 1843 right now. We'd have no issues.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Or 1800. Like, we didn't have the power grid. We didn't have all this. We're doing this to ourselves. So why not know what we're doing to ourselves? Because we created all this in the last 150 years.
Yeah, it's all new stuff. And as you mentioned, we don't know bands, frequencies, durations that you expose human tissue. And we haven't even got into the difference between infants to elderly to sick to well. There's so many variables involved in this situation too. So
yeah. It's knowing the environment you're putting yourself in. Mm-hmm. Because if you're out there in the middle of a forest, you know, up near a mountain, there's probably very little likelihood you're going to be around much of the power grid, but you actually still might being hit by certain radio frequencies that are coming from other man-made sources.
And as you mentioned, just get the basics right, the foundation, which is EMF hygiene, like the mobile phone tip and things like that. So that would be better than actually going crazy on the device testing.
So there's a really easy protocol. It's that you just get away from a lot of the, especially the electronic devices you're using all the time, just making that a lower frequency of use and trying to get outside more like we used to do. And there you go. Like, you're balancing out your health. It's probably the healthiest thing you could do to your long-term health, maybe even more so than the food choices you're making.
Mm-hmm. Cool. I think if anyone wants any more information, because there could be so many more questions that this interview's got you thinking about, emfwarriors.com, go there, sign up for the library, and then definitely join the Facebook group and ask away, and you'll get access to people like Scott and all the other founders and other experts from all around the world, and people are more than happy to chime in and give advice and direction where they can, so you can make a better decision. So again, thanks so much for coming onto the show, Scott.
Yeah, thanks, Gary. We'll talk again, I'm sure.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah, there's always so much to talk about.
All right.
All right. Cheers, man.
All right. Have a good one.